Okay.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. Good morning, Bruce. How are you this morning? And,
good morning.
What's going on with you?
Good morning, Lynn. And I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm just the Windows so politely and kindly decided that I needed to do an update. And when I did the update, it completely just wiped out a whole bunch of stuff that was
forgiveness opportunity, huh?
Yeah, big forgiveness opportunity, and I've been here for the last 2 days trying to get everything back to at least something where it was before. And now, you know, even remembering passwords because it wiped my passwords. So I just kind of, I'm pretty generic about passwords, so I don't really, I try to do something I'm going to remember, but geez, you know, I can't remember who was my best friend when I was a kid or the name of my dog.
Well, I'll tell you, this is certainly off topic in terms of A Course in Miracles, but I use a utility called 1Password. It's the number one followed by password. And I have for about a decade, and it has paid for itself many times over. It's very reasonable. And if I had an affiliate program, I would have probably be a wealthy person if everybody I recommended to had used it. But it's just a great, great program. And it basically will generate and store strong passwords for everything you do online. And it's just, I couldn't recommend it more highly. It's just the number one and then password. There's also a free utility that's similar that I used briefly for a few months. It's also quite good, called LastPass. But either of those two are excellent. And that way you can, you know, kind of feel a little bit more at ease knowing that you're using strong passwords, especially for things like financial accounts and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, worldly stuff, but, you know, sometimes it's helpful to digress a moment and share things that might be helpful on the level of the dream. And because, you know, if those things help put our mind at ease and it's all magic here, but, you know, why not do the magic that works, right? Whether it's, you know, brushing your teeth and going for, medical checkups and appointments and you know, paying your bills and following, sane traffic rules and, you know, just common sense stuff like that, right?
Well, yeah. Well, and I'm like that. I have this implicit faith that, you know, everything is going to be perfect because I've got that Candide thing going on here for some reason. It's just my nature to always think that whatever happens, we're living in the best of all possible worlds and everything is happening just for me. And you know what? Jesus tells us that in A Course in Miracles. So, you know, all these things that seem to be upsets and fearful happenings and whatever, really what I've noticed, and this is just been seeming like a tremendous step for me, is that I don't panic or get upset about this stuff anymore. And I used to be just a just total schizo when everything would go wrong, something would happen, and I would be so upset, so afraid, so worried, trying to figure something out. And yesterday, the other thing that happened that was so interesting, these are interesting things that happen, right? I do have Gary's new book, and I have it on Kindle. So
okay.
At my Kindle.
Okay.
And,
I didn't mean to interrupt. I just thought
But anyway, yesterday what happened was that the radio has not been working for the last couple of days, or, you know, it just stopped working, and I've been having a difficult time with my radio. I'm just trying to get it to go back up and sending emails to the company and saying what's going on. And yesterday I just got to, you know, I just came to the point where I just said, you know, I can't do this. And, you know, I just ask everybody in the room, you know, please, you know, just send me a blessing right now. And let's just take a moment and just have a blessing and, you know, see if, you know, there can't be a breakthrough in this thing it's important to me. You know, I want this radio to work. And so I did that. And then, you know, I went back and checked my email, and there was an email from the guy, and they had changed the servers, and there was a new IP address. And he sent me the new IP address and said, just plug that in to all your players and your server. And I did, and now it's working. And right. It was within minutes of just realizing, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. And just letting go and asking for help. And, he may have been sending me an email right then anyway. And it just happened that I just came to a place
peace.
Peace and
that was a short word.
I was just trying to think of it. Just acceptance. I've been, doing this Sedona method. And the big part of the Sedona method is the acceptance of, just accept that this is the way it is. And then, you can then be open for the rest. You don't have to try or do anything. All you have to do is just accept. And once you accept that, this is the situation I'm in, and you really stop fighting the situation you're in and just be open for a different experience of that situation, you actually have a different experience of the situation. So, this is what Jesus talks about, forgiveness, how it works and how we do with the things that he tells us in A Course in Miracles, and we do come to a peace where there's no need to try. There's no need to try. It's just being and doing. So yay. So we have the new book by Gary Renard. It's called The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, and it's a cute perspective. I have not read it. I got it on Kindle, and you had said that you wanted to read through it and talk about it. So I thought
that might be really handy because it's out now. I did an interview with Gary and Cindy a couple of weeks ago on the YouTube channel, and you can go to aciimblog.com and see it there. I also posted it all over the place on the Facebook. Course-related Facebook group I could find a few days ago when it was launched on Tuesday. Just because I knew it was going to be good and my expectations were not unfulfilled. And I'm only, two or three chapters into it. I'm reading a chapter a day because I have another project I'm working on, namely getting the FIP site ready to be launched, which is coming really nicely. But anyway, so I'm trying to, juggle my time. But just everything I've read is just brilliant. And if you want, I could just read, and if you have it on Kindle, we could alternate reading paragraphs from the introduction.
Sure, absolutely.
Good? Okay, because it's really good. It's really good, and it's a great review and for longtime course students and a refresher, as well as a great introduction for people who might be totally new to the course that happen to be listening. So it's just a really great everything I've read so far is just excellent. But the intro in particular is quite
good. Pretty good long introduction where he talks about, what is the Course of Miracles? So it really is very good if you're not familiar with the course, and even if you are familiar with the course, it's good stuff.
Yeah. So shall I start reading the first paragraph and then
we'll sure.
There? Okay. This is on the introduction on page XV, the rat. Latin. Okay, I can talk.
The Latin Roman numeral
page number, and it starts a note from the author about A Course in Miracles, what it teaches, and its relevance to Jesus and Buddha, which of course are a couple of pretty exemplary figures from our planet's spiritual history, if you will, or metaphysical history. And he starts out with, the purpose of this note is to explain some of the core concepts of A Course in Miracles, how they relate to the subject of non-dualism, and how they are thus relevant to the enlightenment of spiritual masters like Jesus and Buddha. And my little footnote here is in all of us, if we hang in there and keep with it, which is really ultimately inevitable, but why not speed up the process? Yeah, okay. This will make it easier for the reader experienced and unexperienced alike to understand and enjoy the conversations in this book. So that's the first paragraph of Gary's opening intro to his new book, number four.
So you want me to read the next paragraph?
Please? Sure, why not? Okay. Let's just try it off.
All right. This book is not meant to be a substitute for the course. Aside, as I mentioned in the introduction, A Course in Miracles is commonly referred to simply as the course or ACIM. So when you say the course, we're talking about A Course in Miracles. Even a true non-dualistic understanding of the course, which is rare, will not result in enlightenment. Ta-da! It is only by practice and applying the teachings in your everyday life, such as in your relationships, your experiences, and even the events you see on television, that enlightenment will happen. With that in mind, let's proceed. And so I think it's beautiful. I don't know if you caught this, but what he's saying is it doesn't matter if you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you understand it, which is a rare thing for anybody to even understand it, which we all know from our, relationship with other people who study the course, nobody understands it like I do. And
and everyone can say that legitimately, right?
Exactly. But,
no differences here.
All of my understanding is not going to lead to enlightenment. Understanding does not lead to enlightenment. So only knowledge leads to enlightenment. And so very clear here. So with this in mind.
And the way the course uses those terms, I would probably suggest that the knowledge is the enlightenment and the forgiveness is what leads to the enlightenment, to use course jargon anyway. But,
exactly.
But that's kind of, for somebody new, that'd be a little nitpicky, but I think it does help to clarify how we use words somewhat in order to communicate more effectively. So it's all part of that magic in the dream, but why not, use the tools that we do have that help us, make the dream a little bit easier to navigate through and beyond, huh? Okay.
Exactly.
Third paragraph. ACIM was channeled by a research psychologist who heard the voice of Jesus. Her name was Dr. Helen Schuckman, and she was helped enormously by her colleague, Dr. William Thetford. He would type out the words of the course as Helen read them to him from her shorthand notebook. The two of them had a strained relationship, and they worked in an environment that Helen described as, quote, depressing, unquote. I think if we're honest with ourselves, we could describe the world as depressing if we really look at it honestly, at least in terms of the out-of-the-chute interpretation the ego gives us, right? Then one day, Billen told Helen he thought there must be, quote, another way, unquote. The classic line. She agreed, and together they decided to find it. It's apparent that the course... which is, for people who are new, the shorthand for A Course in Miracles, came as a result of that decision.
Exactly. And what was that decision? I give up. It was really what the decision was.
Yeah.
I give up. And it's the same thing with me yesterday with the stupid radio thing. The minute I said, I give up, and let's, ask for help, boom, the help came. It's a pretty amazing thing. So... just by coming to a point where you have that open mind enough to just recognize, hey, there's got to be some other way to do this. That is what opens up the heart and the mind for the Holy Spirit to come in. So, it triggered something that he said that. And they, it's interesting that to me that everyone sees this as the significant conversation. That they had, that one of them said there must be another way, and the other one said I'll help you to find it, and because of that joining, it had nothing to do with the words, it had nothing to do with any part of it other than their agreement to join, and that was and that's what. I think the major concept throughout the course is that when we agree to join with another in purpose, that is when the magic happens, and that's when the spirit is able to open up we're open up to the spirit and able to let that in. But it doesn't happen unless This is my personal opinion, and I think for me it's been the way it has been. It doesn't happen unless I actively decide to find another way. I actively decide that I don't know and that I need help and that I'm willing to do whatever I need to do to get what I need. So bravo.
Yeah, it really is that willingness to suspend our judgments and our condemnations and our grievances and all the wanting to be right, in quotes, R-I-G-H-T, right, as opposed to happy, that it really opens the door to the help from our inner kindness teacher, or what A Course in Miracles refers to as Holy Spirit, or the author of the Course that Helen refers to as the voice, as this next paragraph we'll get into. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm just checking to see if people are hearing us.
Oh, good. That's always good.
Because someone came in the room and said, is there sound? And no one answered because I was watching something else. But I'm just asking if anyone is hearing us because no one answered her. And okay. So we may be just talking to each other and the people on the radio. So that's all very cool. All right. Well, so I'm going to go on the next paragraph. The full story of Course in Miracles, ACIM, is fascinating but long and has been told in several books. For the purpose of this brief note, I'll mention that it took 7 years for Helen to channel the Course, but that she continued to hear what she called the voice for at least 5 years after that. She also channeled two sections that, I have to move this, were added to the Course later. It is clear that Jesus, never stopped working with her. It's also clear that because of this continuity, Jay was the editor of the Course from beginning to end. He corrected Helen's mistakes, mostly in the first 5 of the 31 chapters of the text, and he was totally responsible for its consistency throughout 500,000 words. And here's another in parens. Aside from the main text, there is also a workbook which comprises 365 lessons and a manual for teachers, in parens. For your convenience and later study, direct quotations from the Course are noted and listed in an index in the back of the book. So again, this is very important to me. In my mind, that, in fact, we just listened last night a couple times to an interview that Helen did with a reporter, and Helen explained and described how they edited the Course, and that they asked Jesus about every single word, and every single word was corrected to be exactly what Jesus wanted it to be. So, anybody's telling of Helen with her rationing of editing, she also said that in the book, in the interview. Yes, I edited, and Jesus came back and told me to correct it. So what we have...
That's been documented well in Ken Wapnick's Absence from Felicity book.
Exactly.
Short essay that's on the ACIM.org website, yes, about the editing of the Course, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, and the important thing, though, here that I want to point out that is maybe widely misunderstood is that people will read Absence from Felicity and other things that Ken wrote, and because of a certain mindset among some Course in Miracles students, they dispel all that because it's Ken. And they think that Ken had a personal agenda and that he was doing things for his own personal reasons. However, Helen said very clearly in her voice, in her words, in that particular interview that I listened to, that it was the three of them asked Jesus, and Jesus gave them the answers. It wasn't Helen, it wasn't Ken, it wasn't Bill. None of them were the ones who did it. It actually was from Jesus. I think that's important to know. And so then I know that the version of A Course in Miracles, which I'm reading, and the only version really I have, the others, I have the new one from Robert Perry with all the notes and the footnotes, and I have the sparkly, and I have the original, and I have the urtext, and I have all these different versions. The FIP version, the blue book, that's... published by the Foundation for Inner Peace is the one that Jesus corrected for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the way that Jesus wanted the book to be.
Exactly.
You know, that's my personal opinion. I'm pretty clear on that. So whatever anybody else thinks.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's easy to get into, and Gary gets into this in probably each of his books, I think, is, and certainly in a lot of the conversations that have been recorded that Ken does as well, that it's easy to get into turf wars and to, you know, basically do what's happened with so many other religions is have devolved into a divisive insanity, which is the ego strategy is basically to make a big deal about the level of form. And having said that, I think, you know, also being an author myself, and I've only, you know, written a couple of books, but, you know, if somebody took my rough draft and published it and said, hey, this is the quote, original edition, you know, I would probably have mixed feelings about that, you know, because it's not really what I intended to go out there, you know, kind of thing, you know, because after it was edited to my satisfaction, you know, that's the version that I want people to read, you know, not the one with all the red, you know, strikeout type, you know, and the scribbles in the margins of the, how about this, you know, this could be more readable if I change it to this, you know, because I had help with the editing on my books. And, you know, it's like, well, and if this is the one that, you know, Jesus corrected, why not read that one? not that you aren't going to get plenty of benefit out of reading any version, because the meaning behind it will come through, you know, if that's your intention. So it's always about the intention.
Exactly. And well, also, it doesn't matter what version you read if you are doing it with the Holy Spirit.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
if you're doing it asking for understanding, asking to be shown, if you're doing it for that in those ways, then you're going to get the message no matter what.
Right.
And it doesn't matter which version, it doesn't matter how many scribbles in the margins. You know, most people rewrite it for themselves anyway.
And he addresses that in this new book too, actually.
I had in my dream last night. It's so interesting. I was with Dove, I think, and he was showing me a copy of the course, and it was a completely different format than what any copy of the course is, but it was formatted in a way that he had, you know, extensive notes that he had written in the, like it had huge, like 4-inch wide margins. And so, and maybe it wasn't Dove, I don't know who it was, but anyway, the text itself was in a very small portion of the thing, and all the notes and the explanations and everything were written in these huge margins around the text. And I was looking at that thinking, wow, it's like you just rewrote the whole thing. But but that was, you know, obviously that was for me to see that in my dream. It's interesting.
Yeah. And as you're saying that, I was thinking, well, in a sense, that's what some of the specific messages symbolically that we get help. They're kind of course corrections. Pun intended. that like an airplane, you know, when you're starting to drift off course because of the wind or just, you know, alignment in the controls or whatever that's slightly off, then, you know, making those constant corrections, which is really what our forgiveness curriculum is about, is akin to, you know, looking at those marginal notes in the margins and saying, well, this will help you understand, you know, the context, and the context is everything, because that really means that we can apply it to our lives right now, right here, and get back to the place in the mind where we're choosing the content of our inner kindness teacher instead of the form of the ego, and we're saying, I'd rather be happy than right.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So do you want to – see,
yeah.
I think you read the –
No, let's see.
I think you're at the full story. Yeah, you read that one,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll read the next one. The three other major players in the history of the course were Dr. Kenneth Wapnick, Judith Sketch Whitson, and Bob Sketch. With Helen and Bill, the five of them essentially formed the Foundation for Inner Peace, which became the publisher of the course in 1976. Dr. Wapnick went on to become what my teachers described in my first book, The Disappearance of the Universe, as the course's greatest teacher, unquote. And I would second that. Having listened to many hundreds of hours of Ken's audios and a fair number of his videos and read a fair number of his books, I never did actually quote unquote in person meet Ken while he was around in form, but I feel like he has been and continues to be, a profound, deeply profound influence in my life, along with Gary and a number of other course teachers. But, and again, it's just an opportunity to look at the specialness in our mind that we make, for people who remind us that the whole point is to not use specialness as a way to stay entrenched and admired, is that a word? In ego's silliness. So anyway.
Well, and honestly, I just consider Ken as being a symbol of my right mind.
Exactly.
And it's true. And I don't think he had any kind of thoughts of any other way as far as he was concerned as well. And, what I only met Ken a couple times, once in Denver when he was there, and then went out to Temecula for a week with Ozzie Marie and went through one of the workshops.
Oh,
and
nice.
Just what an incredibly brilliant, gentle teacher he is. And, cause he is still my teacher. I still listen to him. And in fact, my friend Billy Diggs is sending me a whole collection of, Ken Wapnick workshops that he has on cassette. And I have a cassette, thing that you can turn it into digital. So I'm really excited about this package he's sending me because there's some of the older workshops that, and some of these are just really brilliant. I have some Ozzy gave me a bunch of them a long time ago, VHS tapes and that kind of stuff.
We're dating ourselves now, huh?
I know.
And cassette, VHS.
I know.
KSS.
But I'm very, very grateful.
That's cool.
It's a cool thing. And Lynn is saying Prudence offered the same thing this morning. Yeah, people are, they've got these collections, and so it's kind of cool that he's going to be sending me this. But anyway, for me, to listen to Ken is like hearing the Holy Spirit in my mind. The Holy Spirit in my mind alternates between Marshall Rosenberg and Ken Wapnick telling me how to see things and how to think. So so I'll go on to the next paragraph. And for those of you who just came in, we're reading from Gary Renard's new book, The Lifetimes When Jesus Knew Buddha, and Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions. So I'm going to go on to the third paragraph. We're reading the introduction. Not the third paragraph, but the next paragraph. The combined volume, third edition of A Course in Miracles, is the only edition that contains in one place all the writing that Dr. Helen Schuchman, as scribe, authorized to be printed. It is published solely by the Foundation for Inner Peace, the organization chosen by Dr. Schuchman in 1975 for this purpose. This combined volume also includes the supplements to the course, Psychotherapy, Purpose, Process, and Practice, which is brilliant, and the Song of Prayer. These sections are extensions of the course principles, which were dedicated to dictated to Dr. Schuchman shortly after she completed A Course in Miracles. And a couple things I wanted to say about those supplements. They're only available legally through the Foundation for Inner Peace because those are still under copyright, as is the clarification of terms under copyright. And those three items are, essential.
They're vital, and they correct a lot of things that were starting to happen. I guess we were talking about earlier the devolving into, the divisive, factional, and certainly level confusion types of things that happen with pure teachings that become diluted and or distorted as almost all religions, and one might say perhaps all religions.
All religions, yeah.
Have been subject to that erosion. So, you know, the whole purpose of that was, you know, even in its short lifetime in the, you know, mid-80s, that these, you know, there was already, you know, plenty of course students who were kind of going off on their own track, and so that was why these pamphlets, these supplements were generated, was to kind of get things back on course, and again, pun intended, and now they're both brilliant. I have two favorite quotes, you know, just a slight digression from those, one from each of those two supplements from the psychotherapy pamphlet. My favorite line is, and I'm going to paraphrase both of these, is healing begins when the therapist forgets to judge the patient.
Yes.
Which to me is like a wonderful distillation of that whole, but there's a lot of wonderful details in there, you know, in both of those. And then from the Song of Prayer is, the secret of true prayer is to forget the things you think you need.
Exactly.
Anyway, I mean, those are just examples, but they're, you know, two of my favorite quotes from those supplements.
And those are brilliant. And the one about the healing being when the therapist forgets to judge the patient, that is for everything and everyone.
Exactly.
Healing begins when we forget to judge, when we decide that there is no difference between us, me and you, and there's nothing for me to point out as being a difference. There's nothing for me to take as an exception between you and me because, you know, obviously there is no difference. And when I see that, when I see that love makes no exceptions, as my website is called, and, you know, when I recognize that that's the case, that's the truth, then I'm, you know, I'm going to be able to communicate and listen and love you without exception. That's very important. I mean, that's the most important thing, is the without exception. And that's what the whole course is trying to bring us to, I believe. This is my own personal thought about it. It's trying to bring us to the place where we can be joined with our brothers and not see the differences that keep us apart and make us special.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. Thank you for reminding me of that quote about the therapist and the
and thank you for the clarification that it's really about everyone and everyone's relationship to everyone and everything else. When we forget to condemn, you know, when we drop the condemnation, that's when we're healed. That's at the essence of the heart of forgiveness, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. It is the point of it all. I'm trying to put on a different shirt while I'm talking.
No. Okay. You are a multitasker.
It is a goofy shirt that has, I can't even describe it to you, but it's one of these things that they only make for women, I think. They don't make things for men that have ambiguous armholes and neck holes and things that you have to try to figure out which is which. But this particular shirt, it does.
Shall I read the next paragraph while you're doing that?
I think I got it, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
I didn't get it on backwards. That was the important.
Well, we certainly have plenty of things on backwards in this world, but so count that as a small success, right?
Exactly. Okay, all right. Now, oh man, this introduction is just killer, and there's a lot of people who will read this introduction and say, whoa, I don't know. Well, let's see. Because this next one is a big, big hoot also. ACIM is a self-study course. It's not a religion. Although people meet in study groups and start churches that are based on ACIM, at the end of the day, the course, like spirituality, is meant to bring about an experience that will be found not in the world, but in a certain way of looking at the world. This comes from within. And again, we have a lot of, we have a lot of folks who are, you know, interested in making an organization and having organization, a church, ministries. You know, there's all kinds of things that, you know, people come up with that they want to add to A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus didn't prescribe any of that kind of stuff. Right. This really is an individual healing that comes about. And, you know, when he says self-study, Although I don't think it actually says that in the course anywhere, self-study. And I think that was something anecdotal that came out, and certainly has been throughout the history of the course been a concept that's well known. It really is not so much about the self-study as in I'm doing this on my own. It actually is a study of the self, in my opinion. It's a study of the self in knowing the small self versus the Holy Spirit, the big S self. You know, the differences between the small self and the big S self. When you see the differences, then it's very clear when I'm thinking with my right mind versus when I'm thinking with my ego mind.
Exactly.
And that's something that, you know, we can work on together as a group, but I can't ordain you, or you can't ordain me to be the authority figure in A Course in Miracles. I mean, if I started a church with a Course in Miracles and I was the minister of A Course in Miracles, that would inherently make me an authority figure in this dream. And that is completely the opposite of, I believe, what Jesus was teaching. Even Ken, who was seen as an authority figure in the dream, very definitely and still is seen as an authority figure in the dream, even Ken, you know, was saying, don't do that.
Don't. Yeah, well, and it's a very Platonic curriculum, because it's all about... And I haven't read the chapter on Plato yet, which is coming up, you know, a few chapters, chapter two past where I'm at. Maybe it's the next one today. Anyway, but one of the ideals that Plato espoused was that anything having to do with form, which would of course include anything in space or time, certainly personalities and their bodies, can't possibly be the truth. Now they can, if they're, you know, as of course suggested, if we're in our right minds, we can reflect the truth. We can reflect that right-minded decision anyway. But it's certainly, you know, there's one of Ken's brilliant essays in the Lighthouse series that he did, as, you know, that talks about Magritte's painting of this is not a pipe. You know, in other words, it was a painting, you know, and he was talking about it. And the Platonic ideal is very much the same, is that if we look at a specific instance of something in this dream of a world and take that to be reality, we're missing the point completely. And that's true of teachers. It's true of certainly, you know, the whole idea of study groups and thinking that that's the thing. No, I mean, they can be wonderful adjuncts, and I'm a huge fan of study groups. I attend three or four, on any typical given week, you know, online. And I participate in these conversations like you and I are having right now, Lynn, usually two or three a week or frequently anyway. And I totally enjoy those, but I have to keep reminding myself that it's not something I'm doing for the purpose of changing anyone. It's really to look at the contents of my own mind, which is my only responsibility. If someone else happens to benefit from that, all the better, but that's certainly not my intention. It's really just to heal the misunderstanding in my mind that appears to have resulted in an insane world. And then if I can see that and consistently practice that, then I begin to undo the world that the Course talks about, which is in my mind, and see the insanity of having made up that kind of a crazy world. And if I let go of that, then the real world that's behind that will be self-evident, right? So,
yeah. Well, that's the point. And I think that's probably the case. So it seems to be that's happened to me. So I guess, you know, when I've seen it happening in my own life in a kind of magical way, and it does seem very magical. But it certainly is helpful to me to have that perspective. And then it's like Christmas, the presents just come in, you know, I mean, one after the other. You do have those moments of of clear clarity that just basically shore up that idea, those beliefs. And so you move from just I think this works to actually I know this works. And it really does make a difference. Let's see. Do you want to read the next paragraph? Or is
sure,
it
sure. I think I'll go ahead. The next paragraph in Gary's narrative and the introduction from his new book on Jesus and Buddha is, my role as a student of the Course for the last 24 years is to clarify and explain the Course in such a way that students are able to apply it. I can do this only because of my teachers. Without serious help, I would not have been able to understand ACIM. And I think he specifically talking about his teachers, Artin and Persa. But I think we can all apply this to ourselves is our inner teacher. Because Artin and Persa are symbols for him, just as you and I have been talking about, Ken and Gary and many others, are symbols of that right-minded choice in our mind that leads us back to the oneness we never left through the practice of forgiveness and shared interests and trusting that inner kindness teacher. So,
I'm going to
read the next one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let's see.
Part of the style? Is that about, do you want to read that one?
All right, let me go. Because this stupid Kindle, if I touch something, it goes to another page. So,
oh, okay.
All right, but okay, part of this, here we go. Although it's great, it's Kindle on my computer, and so it's big. The letters are big and I can read them. So, part of the style of the Course is ingenuous repetition. It would be impossible to learn the Course without being exposed to its ideas over and over again. This is what my husband calls the red boat. Says we're all on a big red boat, and all we're saying all the time is, the boat is red. Yes, the boat is red. The boat is still red. The boat is red. That's how he looks at the Course in Miracles is, you know, a red boat book. But I don't know where he got that idea, but it's funny anyway. But this is, so you're explaining, it would be impossible to learn the Course without being exposed to its ideas over and over again. This is how the thought system is learned, which makes the Course's brand of true forgiveness possible. You'll find repetition in this book, as well as a few things that have already been said in my other books, that will help you if you use them for their intended purpose. Repetition is not only acceptable in teaching and learning the Course, it's mandatory. The approach of the Course is to undo the false you that is referred to as the ego, thus leading to the experience of your divinity. Next page, please. That will be discussed shortly. But first, let's point out that there's a difference between real spirituality and what has become accepted as spirituality in the past few decades, namely the self-help movement. Self-help. and that's absolutely true. That's the big part of what you have. Like, I'm going this Saturday to a holistic fair, or Saturday or Sunday, here in Pueblo. And, it's going to be like a huge place, you know, pretty good sized place where people have tables and booths. And they're all set up and they're doing things like, selling crystals, singing bowls, tarot readings, palm readings, you know, you name it. You can go into this place and find anything that's been seen or advertised in the last, 50 years as being spirituality and self-help, you're going to see that at something like a holistic fair. And people who have those ideas, which I sure did, and thinking all these magical thoughts about things in the world, will come to the Course looking for those same magical things and actually think that they find them there and actually think that, you know, yeah, this is, you know, what Jesus is telling me here. And it's just an affirmation of what I already believe. And, that's why, in particular, Jesus is so repetitive about stuff, because we've already filled our brains filled our minds with a lot of garbage. And really, you know, when it's already full of garbage, it's really hard to take anything else in. But, you know, as we go through these repetitions of stuff, and, you know, first off, what you see is, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense to me because it says the same thing I already believe is true. And then when I see things that it says that I don't already believe is true, like everyone is innocent, which obviously is not true, then that gives me a cause to stop. Because a lot of the, like the New Age movement especially, you know, well, in fact, a lot of these teachings are not based on the whole innocence of the Holy Son of God. They're based on a whole system of blame and shame and guilt and fear. And so, you know, we try to bring the Course into that system of blame and shame and guilt and fear. And we try to make Jesus and Helen and Ken, say those same things. And, so a big part of the repetition is just trying to chip away at that solid belief system that we have in our minds about how things are so that we can actually see the truth. But, you know, you can't bring your old beliefs into this and, make them fit into A Course in Miracles. It really is a completely different thought system that is not transferable at all, as far as I can tell. That's my opinion. Because even, you know, even Buddhism, there's always, whatever system is there already, there's still a lot of guilt and blame and fear involved. And belief in suffering, belief in things that are, you know, Jesus tells us in the Course are not either real or necessary. So, you know, really, you know, let's talk about not putting down the self-help movement. It's, you know, I've done it, you know, I'm calling it burning bridges. You know, when I say, you know, as much as I read Deepak Chopra or, you know, who else, you know, the Celestine Prophecy or, you know, whatever else I've read in the past that I believed and took into my belief system, it would be disingenuous for me at this point to say, oh, well, you know, Deepak, you know, he's got it all wrong and they make this mistake or that mistake or he's trying to make money or, you know, all the things that you think of once you've gone beyond that belief that makes that belief seem inadequate. It's just disingenuous to condemn people who are still believing that and saying, whoa, you got it all wrong and here's a better way. Really, honestly, those are the bridges and the stepping stones that people use to come to a point where they have an understanding. And if I'm burning those bridges and saying, well, Deepak doesn't know what he's talking about you know, I start with that, then, you know, I've just basically disavowed my own history, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think that's, you bring up a good point, because if we can remember that, you know, we're all going back and forth between, you know, these two thought systems, and whatever we use to find our way back is helpful and should be appreciated on its own merits, you know, and you know, give ourselves not only, you know, slack and credit for, you know, the efforts that we've made, but also, everyone else that has been helpful. And the only thing that's really due our everyone in our lives is gratitude. And if we can, I was trying to flip through the early part of the text where, I should probably have this memorized or with a thicker bookmark or something, but there's a place where it says, you know, that I have saved every loving thought and every kindness, you know, and purified them of their errors. I'm paraphrasing again, but that's basically the idea that, you know, the Holy Spirit will do that, and all that's really left after we strip away the illusion is the intent and the kind of for kindness and you know, the generosity of spirit that we all have, And the more that we demonstrate and the more that we act, operate from that right mind, the easier our life becomes. So.
Exactly. And so nothing is wasted.
Yeah.
You know, even if you've spent, 90 years of your life, in the wrong place, thinking about the wrong things, it doesn't matter because everything that's happened, every thought and every loving kindness has been saved for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a waste. And if on my 90th birthday I discover the truth of A Course in Miracles, then there's no time is lost.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, is that belief in time and belief that time can be lost and that we could be wasting time. You can't waste time. You can't lose time. Although Jesus does say, it's a tragic waste of time that we continue, because we're hurting ourselves every minute that we continue believing in this illusion. So.
Yeah, there's the folk musician named Dakota Sid Clifford who when I lived in Northern California some years ago, he sang the song that lyrics were "Killing time won't wound eternity," and I thought, oh, that's kind of cute, and really it gets back to the fact that we're already home. We're just dreaming of this exiled, insane, nightmarish state that, if we're honest with ourselves, really isn't making us happy. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to be on some kind of spiritual quest to find something, there must be a better way. The question wouldn't arise. And that's why, a lot of times it's been said, if you really find that this world is working for you, then you don't need A Course in Miracles. But, or any other non-dual metaphysical approach. But because, like you say, it saves time, that's why we're here. So, all of these digressions, ultimately lead back to the core curriculum. So symbolically, I will return to what we started to read. But I think all these side conversations are helpful. I find them helpful. So anyway, the next paragraph says, "My role as a student of the Course for the last 24 years is to clarify and explain the Course in such a way that students are able to apply it. I can do this only because of my teachers. Without serious help, I would not have been able to understand ACIM." And I just realized I think I already read that. So if you want to read the next paragraph.
Okay, let me think. I don't even know where you were.
Oh, okay. In fact, I think you read the next paragraph too. About repetition, right?
Right.
Yes, I did. Okay. So let me read the one after that then.
Okay.
That's why I got my place got a little lost too. It is not my intention.
Read the next two paragraphs because.
"It is not my intention to put down the self-help movement. I'm not a hypocrite. I've used the self-help movement successfully in my life. It's just that I know the difference between that and the real deal, and what my teachers give me is the real deal." Again, that's, why not do the things that save time? So the next paragraph says, "The self-help movement is about getting what you want, making things happen in the world, attracting things to you that are outside of you, and achieving your goals. That approach is based on a false premise. The premise is that if you get what you want, it will make you happy." I'm putting a little emphasis on the word "you" because we think that there's a separate "you" here. It's not in Gary's book, but
what, me? I?
Moi. This seemingly separate self, moi. Okay. "The truth is that if you get what you want, it will make you feel good only for a short time, and then you'll want something else." Again, I think he's referring to the ego you here. "It's like a carrot and a stick designed by the ego. The ego thought system is based on the idea of separation. The idea that somehow we have separated ourselves from our source, which is God, as well as from each other. And if your happiness and peace of mind is dependent on what happens in this world, you're in trouble, because the only thing you can depend on in this ego illusion of a world is that it will shift and change. That's what it does. It's fleeting and transitory, offering only temporary satisfaction at best." That's a pretty accurate statement, I think.
Yeah, and I think that pretty much describes us all and the condition of the world.
Yeah, and the strategy that we use as egos to try to, do the dream repair number over and over again, and it's like, how's that working out for you? Well, not so well, if I'm honest with myself.
Really, honestly, it's just a waste of time. Again, that attempt to repair the dream.
Yeah, and again, that brings up, you know, another important point. But it's that it doesn't warrant condemnation or criticism. It just means that we can look at it gently and say, wow, there I go again, trying to fix the dream. Or we, you notice someone in our life who's doing the same thing, and we can afford to be gentle and say, wow, this is an opportunity in my mind to forgive my projection as I see things that seem unripe, as we've talked about in previous conversations, you know, that just aren't quite mature enough to have the discipline to get back on track quickly, you know. And that's okay, you know, because we can take the meandering path and know if that's what we want to do, and take our time getting out of this hellish, miserable state we call ego. But why wait for heaven? You know, why?
Exactly. It's like you have if you have a newborn baby. I have a little granddaughter who's 3 months old, and just an adorable little child. Mm-hmm. And but 3 months old, you know, what she can't do anything, you know, just lay. And now she's starting to maybe try to roll over, you know. But you know, when you hold her, you know, she stretches her legs out and like she wants to stand up, and she'll stand up and stretch her legs and hold them. And I remember all my kids did that. It's, you know, normal for babies, you know. And you're looking at it thinking, yeah, you got to stretch those muscles. You got to get those muscles strong. You have to get those, you know, everything, you know, formed up right, because at some point you will crawl, and at the next point you will walk. But you're not going to walk today just because you can stretch your legs out. You know, you're 3 months old. You haven't got the muscles. You don't have the strength. You don't have the coordination. You don't have any of these things. Well, this is exactly what Jesus does to us in the Course. He doesn't expect us to get up and run. You know, he expects us to learn how to turn over by ourselves, and to learn how to hold our heads up and do all those things before we can ever do this other. So
the point is not to become dancing babies overnight, right?
Exactly.
Like those silly videos that used to be on TV and the web.
Yeah, hilarious. But that's true. Please don't think that just because you started studying A Course in Miracles, or you've been studying it for 20 years, or like Gary, what, 24 years or something, studying the Course, that, you know, all of a sudden you're getting up and running, because it doesn't work that way. Some people, maybe, I don't know, it depends on, you know, their situation. I don't know anything about anyone else other than myself, but I do know that probably the first 10 years I studied the Course, I was in utter confusion and thinking I knew. So, and teaching as if I did, although I think, you know, probably knew a lot more than I think I did. But now, maybe I'm just starting to really understand what it is that he's actually telling us, how it works and how, what to do, where I didn't, you know, I always thought a lot of other things before. Not that I was completely wrong, but wrong enough. So let's see, the next paragraph I'll go to. So what if it didn't matter what happened in the world? That's heresy to the ego. But what if it really didn't matter? What if you could be happy, strong, and peaceful, regardless of what happens in the world? That would be real power. It would be real strength and freedom, and it would be real spirituality. And that's the reality, the as close to reality as you can have in this world. That strength, that freedom, that power that comes about from knowing that nothing in this world can harm a son of God, can change what God made, can make different what God ordained. Nothing in this world can change that, and I am in alignment with God's will, as I am asking only to be, you know, truly helpful. And in that state, there is real power. There is real strength. When you know for a fact, as I am really seeing myself now, nothing in this world can harm me, and I am under no laws but God's. that has completely shifted my point of view from one of being fearful and believing that I must do things and that there's a schedule and there's and I know you probably, because you're in a business, and in your business you have expectations and outcomes and schedules and things that are expected from you. And if you are in a situation where you believe that it is up to you to perform, it is up to you to make things right, it's up to you to do things in a certain way, and that you have a schedule, there's a time, that time is real, the time is important and necessary, all of those mistaken beliefs about the reality of your situation can lead to a lot of discomfort and fear and sometimes even terror, because, you know, you're thinking that it depends on you, that something needs to be done. And, you know, I believe that what Jesus tells us throughout the course is, I need do nothing is really the case, is really the situation that we're in. And as long as I think that I need to do something, and I'm, and I think that there are expectations, and I think that there are rules about how things should be, then I'm going to be suffering because I'm basically siding with the ego. I mean, that's really what it is. But it's believing in my limitation as an ego body being, instead of knowing my power as a holy son of God. And so as I begin to shift more and more into that, and like yesterday with the thing with the radio and not being able to get the radio, you know, whatever I did, I was, you know, going, I was doing tutorials, I was downloading things, I was doing all kinds of stuff. And really the thing I needed to do was just stop and recognize that I was helpless and ask for the help I needed. And it was almost immediate after I stopped and asked for help that the email came from the guy and said, gave me the, oh, here's all you have to do is put in this new IP address. And I put in the new IP address and voila, everything worked. So, you know, my own knowing of what to do had, it was useless. I was just throwing, you know, rocks into the ocean thinking I was going to raise the level of the tide or something. And it just, it was not possible. It's actually coming to the point where you recognize I need do nothing and that I will be given everything I need. That is power. And, you know, once you do that, it's like, oh, what was I thinking? You know, how could I have been imagining that I was, any part of my thinking was essential to the situation? You know, obviously I showed myself how ignorant I was, and how helpless I really was before I actually gave in and let the Holy Spirit take care of it. Anyway, that's my thought.
Good stuff. Yeah, as you were speaking a moment ago, it occurred to me is that, you know, the attachment to outcomes is certainly a key idea in a lot of you know, mystical traditions, and recognizing that, you know, that's a very dysfunctional approach to things and counterproductive for our peace of mind. And I was reminded of a quote from Krishnamurti, which I'll probably paraphrase, but it was something to the effect that I posted on Facebook, I think, a year, two or three ago, because when I ran across it, it was something like, you know, my secret, I don't care what happens. And it's not like there's a, you know, a blasé attitude or a lack of compassion or anything like that. It's just basically not caring in the sense of not being impacted in terms of our inner peace by what appears to happen on the dream screen of our mind. And that's the real freedom, I think, that A Course in Miracles it talks about, because it's a freedom to stay peaceful, independent of any external conditions, recognizing that those external conditions come from the mind, and also that they represent a decision in the mind to choose the wrong teacher. So if we just, you know, kind of get back to those core principles and realize that it's just our choice of teacher, and there's only two moment to moment, that makes all the difference. So I'll continue where we left off with.
I just want to bring that up. Development of trust, that's where it's at. You know, if I never read anything in A Course in Miracles that impacted me, that section of the manual for teachers, the development of trust, recognizing that trust is the foundation.
Yeah.
And once you have reached that state of trust, all the other characteristics of a course, of a teacher of A Course in Miracles comes to you automatically. Mm-hmm. It's like you do become gentle. You do, you know, it actually shifts your entire being when you're in trust because you're not in fear. That difference between fear and love is so huge. So anyway, so let's see. Are you going to read the next paragraph or is it me?
I think I have the next one.
Okay.
Okay. Having taught all over our country and the world for 14 years in 30 countries and in 44 states in the U.S., I couldn't help but notice from many of the questions I'm asked that there is a tremendous feeling of scarcity everywhere. People then attempt to fix that scarcity on the level of form. What you could call the screen, we think, is our lives, by getting something that they think will somehow erase that sense of lack, such as a material thing or a relationship. However, they're looking in the wrong place. The lack is within, not without, and it's not caused by what most people think. As A Course in Miracles puts it, a sense of separation from God is the only lack you really need correct. And then, of course, as that early workbook lesson suggests, I'm never upset for the reason I think. Because we think we're upset because something in this dream screen isn't happening the way our egos would care to have it happen. And that's not the real problem. It's the choice for the ego originally that's the problem.
Exactly.
Or the belief that that choice was even possible, you know.
That sense of separation from God is so huge. And if you don't recognize that that's really how you feel, well, if you think God is somewhere else, right. If you think God is in the sky or you think God is in something or somewhere, that's a sense of separation from God. If you know that God is in you and you are an expression of God's love, then you don't have that sense of separation. And that's the difference between feeling at peace and in trust and feeling afraid and worried.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it.
Yeah, it really is. I've just started listening to a day-long streaming video seminar that's recorded, and I wasn't able to attend listen to it live Wednesday, but the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula, Jeff and Rosemary, have yet another program that I'm just in the process of listening to, but it's about, you know, the whole emphasis is on the idea of loneliness. And if you think about it, you know, how could our egos be anything but lonely when the sense of separation, the sense of loneliness from everything that our senses tell us is that, well, I'm this separate person that's apart from the rest of the universe. And we don't even know how many other beings and other galaxies and other planets and solar systems. I mean, you know, let alone just this one, you know, that we feel isolated from, let alone other species and life forms and yada, yada. You know, because we've made up this whole dream to show that there's billions or trillions or umptillions or however many zeros you want to put after it of others, quote unquote, that we're separate from. And so how could we not feel apart, lonely, and abandoned? But of course reminds us that the only abandonment that really happened was we abandoned our sanity in order to go into an unreal dream that has had no effect on our reality. And that it's just silly that we are continuing to beat this dead horse of thinking that we're missing something or someone or some quality in our life that, you know, others represent to us. So anyway, but it's a really interesting seminar. So I have the other three parts to listen to, and then I'll probably listen to it a few times again after that.
That's pretty cool. Now, if you register for those, do you get those in MP3 form or?
They're downloads. They're video links to streaming videos that you can watch and listen to over and over again for about a week and a half.
Oh, cool.
And then they go away. So I still have another week or so to listen to those. The good news is that there's a couple more for people that are interested. They can go to facim.org and click on the Temecula schedule. And you can, if you happen to live in the Temecula area or plan to be there in Southern California, you can attend those live in person and enjoy conversing with everybody on the breaks there and meet everyone that you know, there. I've only been to Temecula once, so I've only done that once, but for everybody else that has a decent internet connection, you can participate in live streaming and or watch the recordings at your convenience for another week and a half or so after that. So, and I recommend those very highly. The current plan, though, is unfortunately there's only going to be a couple more of those. So there's one in December and one in January. After that, they're sort of reorganizing and that sort of thing. But I highly recommend for people that can catch the last two of them to do that. And they're very reasonable. It's just like $40 for an all-day seminar, which is sort of unheard of in terms of economy, even on that level. So anyway.
Oh, that's crazy. And I just posted the link to that page.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And I'm just wondering, are these archived? And I mean, well, I don't really
think they're recording them. Where and when they will become available in the future, I don't know. But they're just excellent. I mean, obviously, nothing is going to replace Ken, but they have done a brilliant and admirable job of picking up where he left off in so many ways. And they're all highly recommended. I mean, they're very true to this, both the spirit, and the content that Ken shared so brilliantly. And they're just doing a wonderful job with it. So I'm hoping that they will resurface again and at some future time. But there are two more left if anybody's interested, and I highly recommend them. So
very cool. All right. So let's see. Are we up to me reading now?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've said that the ego is the false you, but there's another you, the real you. The real you is something that has nothing to do with this world or the body. Your body is simply a symbol of separation. The real you is something that is immortal, invulnerable, constant, and unchanging, inseparable, and whole, something that can't be touched by anything in this world, something that can't be threatened in any way. And I'm going to go to the next paragraph. When the course starts off by saying, let's see, wait a minute, maybe I, okay, it doesn't, okay, nothing real can be threatened, that's what it is talking about. It means the real you. When it goes on to say nothing unreal exists, it's talking about anything else. Anything that is not this immortal, changeless, invulnerable self. That's why the Course is purely non-dualistic, is a purely non-dualistic spiritual thought system. It's saying that of the two worlds, the unseen world of God and the falsely seen world of man, only the world of God is true and nothing else is true. And man, that is the hardest, I mean, it's a concept, obviously, but it's the hardest thing to really have even get a picture of, because you're getting a picture of a concept. It's because it appears to be something outside of you. That's the whole thing of this out picturing, is because it appears to be something outside of myself. And even my body appears to be something outside of myself. And What Jesus is bringing us to, I believe, in the course, is to understand that the world, the universe, the body, everything that appears to be outside of myself is really inside of my own mind. And that my own mind, what that is encompassing everything. And so, you know, once I go from that inside, outside point of view, to the point of view that I am the one who's making these things happen through my own will and volition, and that I'm responsible for it. And that's not saying I'm bad, because it's happening and, bad things are going on. but I'm just responsible for the dream itself because I'm the dreamer of the dream. You know, what this is that I'm relating to is me being a dreamer of a dream, not seeing that what I truly am is beyond this, and that all of this is like playing out in front of me or in my mind, and it's not really happening at all. So the one I am can't be touched by that. That has no power over me. What I am has the power over all of it. And coming to that point of view is a huge shift, and has been a huge shift for me. And, you know, there's still some times that I'm like, well, you know, why is the world so bad? You know, like, duh, you know, I'm the one who's making it that way. I'm the one who's given it those attributes. I'm the one who's seeing and choosing to see, this thing that includes, life and death and, you know, people that we love. I don't know, Devin's in the room. Did you know that Jody Ebling is missing and has disappeared last Monday and has not been heard from? This is, you know, a cause for fear for, you know, people who love this person. But what is there to fear? You know, there is no person. This is something I made up in my mind, this vision of this character. The truth of what she is has never been missing. And yet I perceive it in my mind because I think that I think that what I see is what's real. Anyway, that's my thinking on that particular, those paragraphs.
Should I read the next one?
Yes.
Okay. The world of God cannot be seen with the body's eyes, except once in a while in temporary symbols, because the body represents a limit on awareness. However, your perfect oneness with your source can be experienced. Even while you appear to be here in a body, it's possible to experience the real you. And spiritual experience is very important. In fact, it's the only thing that will ever make you happy. Words won't do it. My words won't do it. As the Course says, words are but symbols of symbols. They are thus twice removed from reality. End quote. And when you think of it, how is a symbol of a symbol ever going to make you happy? How is it ever going to make you feel full, whole, complete, and satisfied? That kind of gets back to the loneliness, abandonment, and separation conundrum that the ego keeps posing, and yet it's made up, huh? Even a description of the reality of the world of God won't do it. Won't do that. It's just still just words. But an experience of reality, an experience of what you really are and where you really are, will make you happy because it is full and whole and complete and satisfying. And I would, you know, add a short commentary on that. And I think that's why I find, you know, Gary's exercise when I remember to do it of seeing everyone as all of spirit, not just a part of it, is so helpful because it reminds me that that's what I am too. And if I can see that in everyone I meet, that, you know, despite appearances, we are all that is. Each seemingly separate part is really all of that infinite innocence, that infinite essence, and that infinite completion, then, you know, what is there left to do? there's nothing to strive for. There's no desire, which in subsequent chapters he talks about this and certainly the Eastern mystical traditions and so forth. So, anyway.
Well, and there's so many, I mean, there's workbook exercises that do that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Gary's, you know, I still, you know, you are spirit, whole, healed, and innocent. All is forgiven and released. Exactly. You know, that is going on in my mind a lot mm-hmm. whenever I'm, you know, with people, and especially seeing people who appear to be pretty awful. And, you know, you can do anything. You can do Ho'oponopono, which I've done extensively when I've seen that there are things that I don't like about another person. But there are exercises. There are several workbook exercises where Jesus says, you know, pick a person. Pick somebody, and it's somebody you hate, and look at them, and, you know, see the light in them, and let the light extend through them, and join with that light that's in them. And, you know, that's a process that brings about, you know, what we call forgiveness. It brings about an ability to see beyond the body and to see the Christ that is within. And any process that you can use that helps you see beyond the body and to see the Christ that's within your brother, that is what actually shifts the mind, you know, to be able to actually connect to remember God. You know, as Jesus said, you know, I saw the Christ and I remembered God. That's as simple as it can be to do that. But you have to be willing and without exception to do that. If you can say, oh yeah, but you know that, you know, Donald Trump Jr., you know, he went out and killed elephants and cut their tails off. You know, that's a big deal right now. And surprisingly, just an aside on that, you know, I don't know if you've seen that controversy, but you know, Donald Trump basically said, and I read this article and he said, I don't like killing animals. I don't approve of killing animals. You know, I don't like my sons doing this stuff, you know, which really, really surprised me. And I said, oh, you know what? My assumption about him was that he wanted to kill everything. So obviously, that was a forgiveness opportunity big time for me. But to be able to just step back and look at a situation or a person and look for that innocence in them, you know, you don't have to look hard. You know, all you have to do is just see one thing about them, just one tiny little thing about them that reminds you of their divinity or their humanity, whatever you want to call it, that reminds you of, you know, that they are no different than you and that we are the same. That is what brings about that incredible shift. But if you're looking at the world and seeing, you know, looking for validation from it, you're not going to find it. But if you look to your brother and you look for his innocence, you will find that. And you can't turn away from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that brings up the whole idea that the Course constantly and in every page attempts to get us to look at is that our innocence has never been compromised, and that innocence, in order for it to be real for us, for it to be an experience, as Gary's talking about, of peace, which is really the relinquishment of the unconscious guilt by looking at it with the Holy Spirit and seeing that it is unfounded, it's, you know, unconscious but unfounded, and we get conscious through our forgiveness of every little specific detail that comes up in our lives, whether it's a radio system that you use to broadcast your conversations or a news item about, you know, the presidential son shooting elephants or, you know, whatever it happens to be. If there's anything that we have made a big deal out of, it doesn't mean we don't take action in ways that we think are appropriate, but if we are ruffled by and upset by anything that happens in the world, and we allow that to affect our peace and change our identity from perfect innocent spirit that we all are and have to something that's less than that, then that compromise, that substitution, we have to, you know, eventually recognize is not worth it. It's not leading us to the peace that is really our true estate, our true inheritance. And we can return to that awareness by forgiving ourselves for believing that the dream had any impact on what we really are. And you know, just as a quick reminder, you know, we all have those two thought systems and the decision making faculty that chooses between them moment to moment. And in some it seems to be, you know, predominant more than others, but in truth, none of the false stuff ever happened. So we can afford to, you know, be very gentle and forgiving with everyone on the level of the mind. So I think we're just about out of time, but should we pick up where we left off next week? And
absolutely, because
we have quite a bit more in this, just in this note from the author. There's another, looks like 15, 20 pages or so. So, but it's all very good, and I think I'm finding it very helpful to use this as a refresher as well as a deepening of our understanding. So,
Very cool. Yeah, I think so too. And yeah. Also, I talked to you a little bit back and forth about my webpage. And you know what? I'm looking at it and I realized, you know, it pretty much does what I want it to do. I don't think I need to shift or change anything.
Okay. Well, let me know if you do. We can take that conversation offline. But anyway, so I just for people who are just joining, Lynn and I have been reading from Gary Renard's new book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions. We read a little bit of the introduction. If anybody's interested on ACIM blog, I have a couple of recent posts. One that just mentions the book and where they can get it. And if you buy it from my blog, let's just a little quick plug there. I get a little affiliate income from anything that's purchased on that site, but it's the same cost to you, regardless. And also, there's also a video of me talking with Gary and Cindy about both of their new books on ACIMblog.com. So, looking forward to our next conversation next week, Lynn, and, have a great week. Love to all.
Thank you so much, Bruce Rawls. I love you. And, see you next week. And, up next is Devin and Barb, and I see Devin in the room, so that's good news. All right. Thank you, Bruce. I love you. See you next week.
Likewise, Lynn.